Hello and welcome to Alter Geek Unlimited, episode 8. I'm your host, Michael Powers. I'm joined this week by Steve Megatron Phillips.
How are you doing? Good.
So what have you been up to, Steve, last week? Actually, it hasn't even been a week since we recorded last. You've only had 4 days to do something?
I haven't really done anything.
Yeah.
I've been at home and I worked.
Yeah, we're doing this one early again because stuff. Mainly Grand Con.
Yes.
Getting ready to go to that. Got the shirts today. Should have brought your hat over here so I could show it to you.
Nice.
But no, it's over on the kitchen table. But yeah, we're gonna be there on Saturday, but the passes can be picked up on Friday. I'll see if I can pick yours up. I don't know if I'll be able to, though.
Okay.
I will certainly ask.
Yeah.
Because I'm going to go on Friday. They open at 10 on Friday, so people can pick up their badges. But the actual like event, come walk around, see the vendors, play the games, I guess, doesn't start until Saturday. So
yeah, I'm pretty sure that's how that works.
And we finally got shirts.
Yes. Yes, we did.
I'm pleased with the way that they turned out. I was worried. I like my t-shirts. So I think they look pretty good.
That's good to know.
So, and Allie got, my wife got her pink one. So she's happy about that.
I have yet to see them, so I'm not sure how they look.
Well, I sent you the picture, but the picture can't do true justice. I think to me, personally, they remind me of the t-shirts I get from escapismag.com. So I'm okay with that. If they wear or age that in that same manner, then I'm okay with it.
Yeah.
So, and they're Hanes tagless t-shirts, which I'm kind of, I'm happy about.
That means they'll be comfortable.
Yeah. So yeah, we'll have Grand Con coming up this weekend. We'll probably do some cross record with my off the cuff crew and Steve, you know, so we can get a off the cuff Alter Geek thing going on.
Yeah, that should be fun and interesting to see how that turns out.
Yeah, we'll figure out the logistics of it, because like the show floor closes for vendors at about 6 on Saturday, so I guess it really depends on what time you'll be leaving town. So
yeah,
but should we jump right into this listener feedback here?
Yeah, sounds good.
All right, what do we got here? Who's first?
First we got Jason Ritter. He says, are you guys, and he says, Mike and Steve, going to stream live on Google Plus in the future so us, the fans, can shoot the shit with you?
Well, Jason, like I said in the message back to you in the message board, you're the only one that's actually asked. We haven't gotten any feedback from anybody else but you one way or the other. Not that we wouldn't do it just for you, but we just want to see if we can get more people, that we can get like a community thing going on. But it's still, I still plan to do it. I played around with it last Thursday before we recorded episode 7. Some friends and I did played a pen and paper role playing game using the Google Hangouts.
Oh, nice.
We didn't do a live broadcast of it, but it seemed to work. It does this, I don't know if you've ever used it, Steve, it does this interesting thing where whoever is talking, they get their video gets moved up to the center.
Oh, that's cool.
So it'll switch between, you know, like if you're talking, it switches to you, and, you know, and vice versa. So it was kind of interesting. And of course that automatically gets, you know, that goes out live to everyone that's watching it. And afterwards it's archived for YouTube, so people can go there and keep watching it. So, and I believe because of the app I use to record the podcast, the master track for the podcast, I can still grab that audio. so it shouldn't interfere with the regular downloadable podcast. We'd just be able to show you guys things like the t-shirts or the hat.
So, yeah, that'd be cool.
What do we got next?
We got Freddie Savage, who I'm pretty sure is a Super Film Fan, but I'm not 100% on that.
Wait a minute. Well, no, because Super Film Fan is a different guy. Like he's actually got a handle. So there's Super Film Fan 99, and then there's Freddie Savage. You think he's the same guy posting under two different names?
Well, it might be two different platforms. I'm not sure, but I could be wrong.
Okay.
So, correct me if I'm wrong.
Yeah.
He says, the how much your entertainment is worth is a hard one to answer. He says it depends on the cash flow at the time. He says, I'm not going to miss a meal because I need a $60 video game. He says he has come close, although all in all, he's about getting free entertainment as much as possible, which is why he loves podcasts. And then he poses a question to us saying, I'm a noob to the website, that his friend recommended it to him. And he says, one thing I'd like to find out is, how did all this start? How did Geekcast Radio come to be?
We can answer his question later in this episode. But regarding his response, that was, you know, in the last episode we asked people, we were trying to discuss the entertainment, the value, the dollar value of people's entertainment. You know, how do you decide if it's worth it or not? Have you ever gambled with your entertainment? Like, you know, I've got like 3 days until payday. I've got $5 left. This thing costs $4. I can float on a dollar. Have you ever done that?
I have spent more than I've actually gone in the hole to get stuff that I want for entertainment. In the past, I would have just bought the TV show or the movie or the video game and just kind of not really worried about it.
Right.
And then hope that they didn't charge it until after the money goes in the account.
Ooh.
I think that bit me a couple times.
When I was in college, I used to do that with gas. You know, gas takes, at least it used to take, you know, 3 or 4 days, depending on where you went. It took 3 or 4 days for it to hit your account. So I'd always be like, oh, I need gas. So, well, I'm going to have the money in there in 2 days, and it's going to take 3 or 4 for it to hit. So I'll go, I have the money for gas, but I'll go fill up right now. And then I'll go buy some groceries, because that money would still be in there. And then I would like gamble with, you know, stuff getting flipped around. But that's not an entertainment thing. I guess the only time I've really ever gambled with entertainment is back in like 2000, like early 2008, I think it was. I picked up Burnout Paradise. Like, I really wanted Burnout Paradise on the PS3, but I wasn't quite sure if I had I think she wants you to stop podcasting. She's giving me signals. I think she's telling me to move on.
If I was on this video, if we were on video with everybody to see, you would see my cat blocking my face, like, nope, no more podcasting, get away from the microphone.
Yeah, I think she's telling me to move on. But I went out and I had, like, you know, I had 5 days until my next payday, and I had the money to buy the game, but and to be comfortable for the next 5 days. But at the same time, I was like, well, I don't know if I'm going to need this money for the game over the next 5 days. So what I did is I went and bought it. But I never opened it. And I was like, okay, well, if I can make it until Friday and I don't need, and I get paid and I don't need the money, then I'll go ahead and open the game. But if I need it before that, then I can at least return it and get my money back for it. I think that's the only time I've ever really gambled for it. Otherwise, I usually save up for it, or I go and say, hey, go to my wife and I'm like, hey, can you help me out with this? You know? So, what did X51 the Machine Man have to say?
Danner?
Yep.
He says, any plans to make the show available on the Stitcher app? Yes, I have actually forgotten about adding any new shows to the Stitcher app, so I need to actually get on that. It will be done soon, so hopefully you'll be able to find all these shows on there as well.
I've never used Stitcher, so maybe I just don't understand what the value of Stitcher over like a regular podcasting catcher.
It's like a streaming radio station for podcasts.
Okay.
So you can subscribe and kind of pipe into certain podcasts, and your Stitcher app will synchronize and let you stream. It'll let you know when there's new episodes and let you stream it. It's kind of like iTunes on it, but on the go kind of thing.
I was going to say, because it kind of sounds like the podcatching, for anyone that doesn't know, you could basically call me an Apple fanboy. But the iPhone podcast app and several other apps like Downcast and stuff like that, it sounds like they do the same thing. Like you feed your RSS, the RSS feeds for the podcast that you want into the app, and it automatically downloads new episodes, allows you to stream new episodes. I don't know. I guess I just don't. I mean, I understand why to do it. I just thought it was something different than just another catcher.
Like an on-demand type of radio thing, and it's free for like iPhone, Android, iPad, and PC.
Okay. All right. What do you have to say about the?
What else did he have to say?
The driving question.
Yeah. He says, I don't mind driving, but I love driving a stick. Driving a stick makes you feel more connected to the entire driving experience.
I have to say, I've known Danner for 9 years now. Wow. Wow. It's crazy. Anyways, can't believe I've known him for that long. I never knew he... I never knew he knew how to drive a stick. I didn't know he ever drove a stick. So, wow, that's something new that I learned. I like driving manual transmission cars. Unfortunately, I can't drive them anymore. Not because I forgot, but because I'm physically unable to. Have you ever driven stick? You work at a dealership. You have to have driven stick.
Working in a car dealership, the funny part about that is my first week there, one of the salesmen is like, yeah, this vehicle needs gas. Guess what you're doing today? You're learning how to drive a stick. So he had me driving around the dealership in the back lot for a good, I don't know, 4 to 5 hours with another stick until I got the hang of it enough to drive it and managed to stall it out all the way to the gas station. And yeah. It took me a little bit to figure out how to keep it going.
Is that the first time you ever drove stick?
Yeah. Working at the dealership?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. My first time driving stick, my dad was very adamant about teaching me to drive stick, and I was like, not having it, not having any of it. He bought me like a Jeep that was a manual transmission that I never actually got to drive, but I never got to drive like out anywhere. He ended up selling it again. My dad buys and sells cars like it's nobody's business. But I remember one time I drove it around my parents' subdivision and I forgot to take off the emergency brake.
Oh, nice.
But I didn't know that. The car was just really like herky jerky, and I thought it was because it was a manual. No, it was because every time I let my foot off the gas, the car was trying to come to a complete stop. And it was like a couple years after that I too got a job working at a dealership. We used to work at Superior Pontiac.
Okay.
And the first manual transmission car that I ever drove that I wanted to drive was when they told me that I needed to move. I was a porter. They told me that I needed to move the Pontiac Trans Am WS6s from one side of the lot to the other. And I was like, yes, I can do that. I didn't know. I was like, okay, I can remember how to do this. And I did it. But no, my first two real cars, the Ford Tempo was a manual transmission that I talked about last week. And the car I had after that were manual transmissions. And I love both of them. They are a lot of fun. You do feel a little more connected to the whole experience. The car I have right now is a G6, and it has the Manumatic where you can you tap to shift.
Yep.
That's fun. I used it a couple times when I first got the car, like 6 years ago, but there's really no point to using it because there's no skill involved in it. Like it won't let you downshift unless you're going slow enough to downshift.
That's kind of goofy.
So it's not like you can't like power drive with it like you can with an actual automatic where you can, or with an actual manual where you can just, you know, slow the car down by dropping gears. It doesn't let you do that, mm-hmm. which is kind of a bummer. But what do you have to say about his entertainment? Did you lose your place already? It's your script.
No, I was actually adding the show to Stitcher.
Oh.
So it should be on there soon. He says, entertainment is a cornerstone for me. If it is something I'm interested in and I can justify it to my wife, then cost is relative. Time is a larger issue than cost for me.
So finding time to play it is a bigger issue than the cost. But what if you, like, I mean, I can ask him this himself, but if he listens and he can answer the question for us, but like, is there a difference between, if you, let's say you justify it to your wife, you like take Gone Home, for example. Let's just say that was a $60 game. You justified it to your wife. You paid $60 for it. You sat down. You gave yourself like a bunch of time to play it, and you were done in 2.5 hours. Like, I don't know. I see that's a game, though. So it really depends on how you get into what.
I think it would depend on the game, though.
Yeah. Yeah. This is a really hard question to ask. And I'm glad that a lot of people seem to have trouble answering it.
Yeah, because that means that we're not in the doghouse for not having a difficult time trying to figure it out as well.
Yeah, I mean, like I said, like we said in last week's episode, I do justify things to my wife, but more so it's just to back up my justification for purchasing something. I don't have problems paying $60 for, you know, a game that's 4 or 5 hours. It really depends on the quality that was put into the game and stuff like that, or anything for that matter. All right, and he had some questions he would like us to address in a future episode, correct? Do you want to share those?
Yeah, he said you guys should cover non-conventional media that you enjoy, like your favorite podcasts outside of the Geekcast Radio Network family, or your favorite web-based shows or YouTube videos, which I really like that idea.
I like that idea too, but not for this episode.
No, not for this episode. That's a completely different episode that we could kind of roll all those into one.
Yep. Yep. Our favorite non-site
media.
Yeah. Yeah, that's what we want to do. Point people in another direction.
Well, I mean, if it's certain video shows or something, or certain tech shows, or, you know, just I have select podcasts I listen to that aren't from our network.
You know, I'm gonna be brutally honest. I don't listen to any of our shows.
You don't listen to any of the Geekcast Radio shows?
No, because, well, the problem is, if I was, the ones that I would listen to are the ones that I'm on. Like, you know what I'm saying? Like the ones that have the shows that have the content that I would listen to from other people, like, I'm on those shows, and I was there. I lived it. I don't need to relive it. So
I'm kind of strange. I'll sit there and listen to the episode because half the time I can't remember what I said during the show.
That makes you sound like a drunken fool.
It happens. I mean, I'm coherent while I'm listening to it, or while I'm recording it, but when it's after the fact, I'm like, you know, I really don't remember what I said.
No, I can understand that.
Because I've been on so many of them, I have a hard time keeping track of what I've done on what show.
Right. For me, though, it's if I can get through a show, and I usually just forget it. Like that's probably what you do, right? You get through a show and you just forget it. So it's like when people like show up in the on the comments and they're like, you said this or you said that, and I'm like, I don't even know what you're talking about, and I'm not gonna go listen to find that part.
I'll go listen to it, but that's just because I'm curious, and then the important information I'll retain, and the other stuff I kind of just forget. Like yesterday, I can't remember what I ate for lunch. So I mean, it's it's one of those short-term memory type things.
Right.
Not that I don't care, because I do. I just, I have so much on my plate that I just can't retain it all.
No, that's understandable. Sean Alteria?
I'll let you go with that.
All right. For the question of do you enjoy driving? He says not in the least, which would put him firmly in your camp, Steve.
Yes. Well, I enjoy it to some degree. Depends on what I'm driving.
I think that might have a big part of it. I think that plays a big part of it for some people.
I think, like, to me, a Corvette isn't that special because I have to drive them up to the lot every morning and I hate it.
I think they're
so hard to get in and out of. Whereas if I was driving a Camaro to the lot every day, or like a souped up G6 or something like that, I would be more apt to want to get in it.
Okay. I don't agree with you about the Corvette, but then again, I don't have your job. But no, I love being a porter. I went to work there after school for, I think I worked 4 or 5 hours after school, Monday through Friday, just moving cars around the parking lot, brand new cars. It was a lot of fun.
That's what my job started out as.
I miss it. For the question of how much is your entertainment worth? And again, he says, that's very much a loaded question. It depends on the product. For most things, you know what to expect before you buy them. Video games, movies, etc. How much time something requires doesn't pertain to what I buy too much. A comic may only take 4 minutes to read at the most, but that also has the potential to increase in value. Most things like video games, movies, and such don't have that option. My entertainment is worth a lot to me. Most of my free money goes to it. Why make the money if you don't enjoy spending it? That last thing is one of the things that I live by. Why bother making the money if you don't, you know, if you don't enjoy spending it?
Yes, I agree.
Obviously not everyone's in a position to do that, you know, bills, you know, other responsibility, family responsibilities and stuff like that. I get that a lot of the time I find myself in a unique opportunity that others aren't in. This is one thing I kind of have to keep reminding my wife of every once in a while. It's like, you know, we're pretty well off, you know. It's like we can afford to treat ourselves to nice things. We're not like buried under debt and all this other stuff. So,
yeah.
Well, obviously some things can be looked at, going back to the value question, some things can be looked at as an investment. My question, I guess, would be, when's the last time a comic that you bought has gone up in value? I'm really interested to know that one because I'm not a big comic guy, but I know that with the influx of digital comics, I have to imagine that kind of drives the value of the print one down, being that it's so readily available. But then again, there's always going to be somebody that wants the physical media.
Yeah. I even discovered that some of the new 52 issue ones are worth up to $60 to $100, just depending on the issue.
Wow.
Which is strange to me. Like, I just looked them up and was kind of like, oh, I got, because like a couple of the Batman ones I have, I'm like, oh, they are worth like $60. Only because they're like first edition and issue one. So I'm holding on to them because I have the trades for some of them. So
if anyone hears something funny in the background, it's my giant fat ass cat about to do something really stupid. Anyways, there's a video game that I have. It's called Xenogears. It was released on the PlayStation. It's like in my top five favorite games of all time. And it had a limited run here in the US, and for a time it was going for $300 a copy.
Holy crap.
I was working at Babbage's when it hit that price point, and they had an unopened, a brand new, unopened, non-greatest hits version for the regular price of $50. So I bought it and I still have it unopened.
Nice.
But the value on it has crashed.
Oh.
But I never bought it with the intention of selling it. I can't do that. I can't buy something with the intent, like the intent on selling it. Like for example, I bought a Wii U last November. I got it the Monday after it released. And we picked it up and my wife was like, you should sell that online. You should turn around and sell it online and try and make, I'm like, I can't do that. Like, or I'd feel wrong because I feel like I'm taking away from some kid that actually wants that or somebody that actually wants, like, I'm not the kind of guy that just does something to make a profit off of it. Like, and I said, if I was going to sell it, I'd put it up on eBay for what I paid for it. Because I don't want to make a profit off of someone that would actually buy it and enjoy it more than I would. But so, yeah, I never bought Xenogears for that specific purpose. I still have it. It's still in open. The market fell on it. I think right now it's around $75 to $100 for it.
Okay.
So that's like, I mean, and that kind of goes into like the collectible thing that we can talk about on another episode. But let's see. I don't know. I don't have anything that I think has gone up in value.
I don't think a lot of stuff does anymore because they mass produce it to the extent that it's just it's like, I don't know.
Yeah, the market gets flooded with it.
Yeah, it's flooded. I mean, there's a lot of the stuff you can't really buy it judging that it's going to be worth something. You buy it because you want it.
Yeah, there's well, that's what happened with the Xenogears is that it, as soon as I found that, then Sony was like, oh, you know what? We're going to make it a greatest hits title. And all of a sudden they had the green, like the greatest hits version that was like $20 a copy. And the market got flooded with them. So now anybody could get a copy of it. So it was like only the hardcore that would want an original print of it. Not only that, they destroyed the market even further with the PlayStation 3 because they released the game on the PlayStation Network for $10.
Oh.
So I've now bought 4 copies of the game. I have the unopened copy. I have there was the original copy I had when I played it and I lent it to my cousin. But when he gave it back to me, one of the discs was damaged. So that was no longer playable. So I went and bought another copy so I can continue playing the game, and that copy got misplaced somewhere. And then I ended up buying the third copy, which is my sealed copy. And then I have a PlayStation Network copy that I can play when I want to and don't have to worry about losing it.
Nice.
Other topics he would like us to discuss. He says, board games or tabletop games would be cool. I love the written reviews on the site and like to see more stuff about those types of games. Do you play any? If so, what kind? Who writes the reviews, the game reviews for the site?
Dan's sister.
Okay. We will have to relay that information to her, that you would like more tabletop reviews.
Now, I did attempt a tabletop podcast at one point, like a year ago. I only got one episode in, and that was because the guy that I was doing it with got canned from where I work, and he ended up getting another job and moving all over the place. So, yeah, that show never progressed. But the intent of that was to talk about board games and tabletop games.
So, are you familiar with a lot of board games? And
I'm familiar with some of the ones that I've played. Like, so I've played probably close to a dozen, like Couriers, Pandemic, Legend, or Settlers of Catan, Ticket to Ride.
Okay.
Star Trek Expedition.
I've done Settlers and Ticket to Ride. I've also done Formula D. And
I haven't heard of that one.
I do a lot of a lot of the card, not like Magic the Gathering, but a lot of the card based games. Like I have one that's called Chrononauts. You lay out a timeline. There's some of the cards build a timeline. You lay that out and that's like your game board. It goes from like the 1900s or like the 1800s all the way to like 2005, I think, or something like that.
Oh, wow.
Or it's 95. And so there isn't like one card for each year. There's just they took that chunk of time and they mark each card is marked with like a pivotal event. So like you have like the assassination of Lincoln and the assassination of JFK, like those are cards in the timeline. Or like the start of World War II or the Hindenburg explosion, like those are the cards that make up the timeline.
Oh, wow.
And then you have other cards that that tell you what character you are in the game. And then you have another card that gives you an objective. So you have your character and they come from a certain timeline. And then you have an objective of things to artifacts to collect, like the Mona Lisa or just other like dinosaurs or something like that. It's a lot cooler in execution than it is to talk about. But basically what you have to do is your character comes from a certain timeline, and one of the ways you win is by altering the existing timeline that's on the board. You have to alter events so that they become your timeline. Like you have to prevent the assassination of JFK and prevent the Hindenburg from exploding. And
Okay.
that is the timeline that your character comes from. So when the timeline is matched up the right way, that's how you win. If you have, there's things called a linchpin where things can go either way. If too many of them are exposed, then you create a paradox and the whole game is over. Like, so there's a lot of different ways you can play the game. You can choose to screw everybody over and just try to create the paradox and the whole thing caves in on itself, or you can try to complete your missions that you get from your character cards.
Nice.
It's a lot of fun. It's not a quick game by any means.
None of these games are actually.
Well, I mean, yeah, you're right. But in Chrononaut's case, there's like you could do like a full game where you have to complete all three objectives. Like you have to collect your mission things, you have to restore your timeline, and then you have to do something else. Or you can just say, okay, the game is over once you restore your timeline, and then that's all you focus on. So it can be as long or as short as you want it to be. Formula D is the one that you said you haven't heard of.
Yeah.
That is like a racing game. It's a
Oh,
racing
okay.
board game, where the board is a track and there's like spaces on it and different lanes, and I believe that the amount of die that you roll or the die that you roll is dependent on what gear your car is in.
Okay.
And there's like lots of rules for going around corners too fast, like you'll slide out to the outside corner, or and it's really neat if you're like a car guy. Settlers, I mean, do you want to talk about Settlers at all?
Basically in that you collect different resources, whether it's wood, brick, wheat, sheep, or stone, and you build cities and roads and build settlements out of them, and the goal is to use up all your pieces, build the biggest town, and
Right.
have the run out of road basically. Once you run out of road, then the game's over. But if you don't place your cities correctly or settlements, you essentially screw yourself because it goes by a roll of the die for numbers of whatever that number happens to be of that particular corner or resource of the individual hexagon pieces that make up the map.
Right.
Pandemic is kind of interesting too, that it's a 2 to 4 player game, and it kind of it has to do with various viruses. There's four different kinds that spread throughout the planet, and you have to prevent them from spreading. So you have to find the cure in different places, and basically if you don't get it contained, you have to cure it at some point, but you have, if you don't get it contained, then the game's over and it spreads uncontrollably.
I'm not sure I've seen this. I feel like I've seen it at some point. My friends play a lot of tabletop games and board games, but I'm not sure that I've seen that one.
It's pretty fun. There's another one, I can't remember the name of it, but if you pull up certain cards, it floods the land. Hmm. I can't remember what it's called, but it's where certain, like you have pyramids or you have like a Stonehenge looking thing, and there's a lot of different artifacts and you have to collect certain things and go around to different areas on the map, and it's a co-op game where you're fighting against the board. Another one kind of like Pandemic, and it's multiple player, and basically you have to each person has a certain skill. Like certain ones can move more than once. Some of them have a helicopter thing where they can fly people to their position.
Never heard of this either.
It's, I can't remember the name of it, but it's real interesting to play. Couriers, that's a dice game. It's something you can easily play in about 20 minutes. Because we used to play that on lunch. Basically, you just it's like a monster game with dice or dice, and you can upgrade the different things or discard certain cards, and it's like a monster upgrading kind of game. Good game, but it gets boring after a while of playing it, though.
Yeah, one last quick game that we could mention before, I mean, because some of the stuff could actually be a podcast in and of itself or an episode in and of itself, like just to cover it a little more. One of my other favorite games, I've only ever played it like once or twice. It's called Let's Kill. It's kind of like, it's like Chrononauts where it's a card based game. And it's kind of like the GTA or the Grand Theft Auto of card games. So it's, you get a series of cards that depict like a person or like a location and some type of weapon. And okay, the idea is to string them together in a way that gets you the most points. So it's kind of like you have a cheerleader in the basement with a baseball bat. So you're going to kill the cheerleader in the basement with a baseball bat. And you're awarded points based on your card combinations.
Nice.
I don't really. And there's like lawnmowers and like back alleys and like, you know, stuff like that in there. It's
like GTA mixed with Clue.
Yeah, pretty much. You get to. Yeah, it's kind of funny. I keep thinking I need to buy a deck of the cards, and every time I go look at them, I find them, and then I decide I don't have the money to buy it. So, but no, I like a lot of others. We like a lot of other things too. Like, I asked on the forum if this could be extended into like pen and paper RPGs, like D&D and like Shadowrun. So we can definitely talk about this more in the future.
Played a game like that in high school. It was a paper version of Warhammer.
Man, do I know what that?
I've never seen anybody play it like that. And it's on like grid paper,
but no, it's like no, like with dice, like
no, there's dice, but it's you have certain like imaginary pieces. You kind of draw them in a certain space on the board, and then you have to erase them as you roll and move them in certain directions. And it's,
so are you using the Warhammer rules for the figures, and then just translating.
There were no figures. It was all drawn on the paper.
Right. But what I'm saying is, are you using the rules that would apply to playing with the figures, but just using paper? Like,
yeah, I believe it was.
So like the, okay. All right. I've never done that. I don't think I've ever heard of that either.
Cause I've played Warhammer before. And then cause I had a buddy that in high school that played it. And used to paint the models and everything, and then he'd have me do mock scenarios with him, and then we used to do the paper Warhammer
That's interesting. But yeah, all this here that we've been talking about, that's what Grand Con is.
Yeah. So
So
if it interests you and you live in the area,
check it out.
yes. Next we have Connor Murphy.
Yep.
He says, as someone who collects action figures and statues as a main hobby, the time spent is not a big factor. The quality of the product is the most important, so I want to get the most from my money. If I could spend $300 on top of the line product or get something bottom of the barrel for $25, I'd go with the top of the line. I'd rather have fewer figures than have that are more unique and interesting than a bunch of average items clogging my shelves.
That I can get behind. My only question is, time spent is not a factor, the quality of the product. So, but okay, I mean, I wish you would have, I wish there would have been some included examples here because, I mean, what, I guess then what, that goes right back to it, right? What determines a quality product? I mean, that's kind of, that's the question, right? Then.
Yeah.
Like how do you know? I understand you gave the he gave the price example that I understand that, but how do you determine that, I don't know, the $300 for something is, so a lot of the stuff that we were talking about, right? Like comics and games and movies, you don't really, it sounds like more like he's talking about stuff that can sit on your shelves, like action figures or collectibles that people can see readily that you display.
Yeah.
So I understand that. Like I spent a hundred and no, like $200 for my Lego B-Wing that I have. That was totally worth it to me. And I have that displayed. It's kind of, but it's like, you know, I don't know. I feel like now we're talking about two different things. It's something. I think he's talking about something that you display on your shelf, and we're talking about something that has like a finite entertainment allotment. You know, like a movie is like $6, $7 for 2 hours. You know, a video game is $60 for a 10-hour play experience. A comic is $4 for 5 minutes worth of reading. That's the kind of stuff we were talking about, to see what, you know, how that, you know, came out to you.
Now, if you play with your toys.
Yeah, but then again, I don't know that I'm really going to want to play with something that I spent $300 on. I mean,
No.
I take my B-Wing down every once in a while, and I just hold it and tweak its wings every once in a while. But I have a pirate ship up there, a Lego pirate ship that I got for Christmas, which is about the same price. And that's got the little figures in it and stuff like that. And I've never touched that. I built it, put the figures on it, and then I put it up on my entertainment center, and I haven't touched it since. So, but that was a Christmas present. I didn't spend my money on it, and I wanted that solely for display purposes.
Nice.
But I don't know. He follows that up with regarding that, did you ever think about collecting? About collecting things like figures or statues or really or anything really, do you collect anything besides the normal video games, comics, etc.? We both do, but I think that's an entirely separate episode.
Yeah.
So,
We'll definitely come back to that though at some point. The other non-media forms of collecting.
So yeah, I guess, you know, we've both. You know, you come down on the side of the fence that you don't really enjoy driving unless it's a particular, you know, particular cars. Whereas I
Yeah.
myself enjoy driving anything that has wheels on it. So far, the whole the entertainment value, you know, dollar value thing seems to be very subjective. But what I've noticed is that people don't seem to have a problem spending money on stuff that they enjoy.
Yeah, I can definitely see that.
So, and yeah, you guys give us a lot of things to talk about in future episodes. So you can look forward to those ones. As to which episodes we'll be talking about those, you'll just have to keep listening.
Yeah, we tend to not want to plan too far ahead, because then if something cool pops up, then we want to be able to just talk about it. And but we'll definitely hit all these points at some point.
So, now just real quick, I would like to touch on my other podcast real quick. Off the Cuff is doing the 7th Generation Best of Awards. We've posted the link for it, for the rules and stuff, in the forums at forums.geekcastradio.com.
Yep.
And they are going to be in Thursday's episode, Thursday's episode post for Off the Cuff, which is also episode 28. The rules and categories will be in there as well. What we would like you to do is paste and copy that list into an email. Try to provide at least 3 nominees for each category and mail them back to the website. And then we'll get them over to Danner over on Off the Cuff, and he'll run it through his little magic number thing, and we'll come up with a best of for you guys. For a future episode of Off the Cuff. And if we find out that it's really special and enough people have participated, maybe I'll share the winner on Altered Geek. Maybe.
Yes.
So, please, head on over. We would really appreciate the participation. For the game of the year last year, we kind of just chose, we basically did the same thing. It was kind of, we all made a list. So I think we did top 5 games that we played that year, and Danner went through and saw which ones matched up amongst the 4 of us, and that was, you know, that's where that list came from. We would like to do that again this year, but first we need to get you guys engaged, and so we're doing the 7th Generation Awards first, with the Game of the Year Awards to follow later this fall, early next year. So, but yes, please interact with us. We really appreciate it. All right, we are going to take a break, and we will be right back.
The Pull Bag is the GCRN's place for everything you need in the comic book world. We focus on new and current comics, while also tackling a few back issues here and there. So join the entire GCRN crew and see what issues the hosts have with today's panels. You can find The Pull Bag on iTunes and geekcastradio.com. Make your great escape into comics.
All right, we're back on the other side of, well, technical difficulties and an ad. For the first time ever, now we just have to figure out what's going to be. If you're still here, I'm still your host, Michael Powers, joined again by Steve.
Yep.
Now we're going to get into the meat of it a little bit, which is how we got into podcasting and the creation of the Geekcast Radio Network.
Yes.
I think you should go first.
Okay.
Since yours is probably longer and more storied than mine.
Yes. How I got into podcasting was actually, it started in a long list of things from 2005. I ended up, I started out doing fan dubs of Transformers, and ended up getting a cheap microphone and then eventually a headset and all that other stuff. So the talking on microphone kind of intrigued me at the time. And then as it progressed in 2007, I joined tfwire.com doing the War Stories podcast, which went 15 episodes, and I guested on their Transformers the Movie review podcast with Spada and Jesse, and there was another person on there, I just can't remember right now who it was. And then I did one of their video game podcasts, and then so the kind of fire to do the podcasting thing was kind of already set through doing that. So through those 17 episodes, I decided, after most of the shows went to an end about that time, that I wanted to do my own Transformers podcast. So I created All Things Transformers in 2008, along with the concept for Movie Week in Review, which was another podcast that I had kind of in my back pocket at the time that I never actually used, which eventually comes into play later. But later that year, I ended up meeting TFG1 Mike, and he wanted to create a Transformers review podcast of Generation 1. So I ended up being the host, the web host for his podcast, as well as the editor of the podcast, until he learned how. So I used Audacity and all that stuff at the time, and then we actually edited, much like this podcast is edited, which is audio recorded on opposite sides instead of using a Skype call recorder, which we eventually switched to later. But so after doing both shows for a little while, we ended up guesting on each other's shows and then decided, hey, let's create a network. So we created Geekcast Radio later in 2009 in May or June, one of the two. I think it was May. And then Movie Week in Review came out shortly thereafter, and some of the other shows started popping out of nowhere and sort of kind of starting the wave of things that would come later. And here we are almost 5 years later and still doing Geekcast Radio and podcasting in general.
Yeah. See, I knew that was a lot better than mine. And by the way, I hope you guys are appreciating the editing style, because sometimes it can be a pain in the butt.
Like tonight's.
Yeah, tonight's. Actually, tonight might not. I mean, I still have to edit it, but it could prove a little. It'll be the most fun I've had trying to put it back together.
Thanks, Skype.
But let's see. Well, for me, I've always, being the Apple fanboy, as soon as Apple put podcasts in the iTunes store back in 2004, maybe? Maybe it was 04? Or it was 05? 04 or 05. Whenever iTunes put podcasting into the iTunes store, that's when I really got into it. I started with podcasts like Dignation. Started listening to those guys. Really like Kevin Rose and Alex Albrecht and stuff like that. And from there, it kind of spun out. Like, I actually, what it was I was following a lot of the tech TV guys, Kevin Rose, Leo Laporte, you know, the Twit or Twig or no Twit, the Twit. Twit. I mean, yeah, This Week in Tech. Following some of those guys. From there, I somehow stumbled across the 1UP network of podcasts from 1UP.com, which was like 1UP Yours, Retronauts, Active Time Babble. Got really into those, and I would listen to, you know, all their shows on a weekly basis. From like 2006 to like 2008, they were like the only podcast I listened to because I was really big into games and they were covering everything. And I honestly was still reading Electronic Gaming Monthly and listening to those podcasts. I felt like the same people that recorded the podcast were the same guys that wrote the reviews for the magazine. And I felt like every week I was sitting down with a group of guys, and it was actually, instead of just them being words on a page, I was actually learning about their personalities and what type of games that they liked. So then I could just by listening to them, I could kind of figure out if I would like a game or not, see if, you know, stuff aligned, if their interests aligned with mine and stuff like that. And 1UP went through a lot of problems at the end of 2008. And they ended up getting, they ended up laying off a whole bunch of people. And as a result, like the 1UP show or like 1UP Yours got canceled. A couple of other, like the Games for Windows podcast got canceled. The Brodeo, for anyone that actually may follow that podcast, that got canceled. And I followed those people to other shows. Like Garnett Lee went over to Shaq News and started Weekend Confirmed, which is a really great video game podcast. And some of the other guys, they got together in this small little group in a guy's apartment and they started doing Rebel FM, which is another great podcast. It's actually an amalgamation of those two podcasts is kind of where I got the inspiration for Off the Cuff. But at that time when 1UP was collapsing on itself and video game podcasts were kind of starting to take off because the talent had all of a sudden gotten scattered all over the internet, I decided that after listening to them for years, I was like, I have these same conversations with my friends about movies and video games and all this stuff. Why not record my own podcast? So I started talking to some of my friends and figuring out the logistics of recording a podcast, like looking into microphones and software and stuff like that. And come to find out, I had most of it. A lot of the guys at 1UP recorded all their podcasts in GarageBand, which is what I use for editing. For some reason, I can't get it to record for crap the way that they could. I can only edit in it. I can't record in it. Which is a travesty, giving my computer. But after that, we threw around a bunch of names. We're going to do like Casual Gamer or Casual Geek or something like that. And then I decided on, and you know what? We never really figured out what the original name was. We don't know if it was The Lunch Table or The Lunch Room. But the idea for it was to be those conversations you had in the lunchroom in elementary school and middle school and high school. If you were a geek, you sat around the lunch table talking about, you know, movie news, movie rumors or gaming rumors or tips or stuff like that. So that we settled on The Lunch Table or The Lunchroom. We ended up registering thelunchroom.net. I don't even know. See, this is where it gets kind of weird. You found me on Twitter.
Yeah. I actually forgot like a big gap of stuff that happened in between the TFG one and ATTF before the Geekcast Radio formed. I stumbled because I started using Twitter. I started hearing about Twitter, and this is before I even used my Facebook, really. Because I thought it was a pain in the ass mostly, but
still is.
It still is because I'm not getting into that. We'll do that on another episode of something.
Social media. But
I started using Twitter around that time, and I came across This Week in Geek. And I started listening to Steve Snowball Sailor and Mike the Birdman Dodd. But this is when they were on the CRNC radio station in Niagara College.
Okay.
So you had to punch in the IP address into iTunes to listen to them live at 9 o'clock in the morning on Fridays.
Okay.
So I actually started listening to that, and when the search terms for people in iTunes, or not in iTunes, in Twitter came up, I searched for anybody that had podcast or geek.
Okay.
And so I ended up bumping into TFG1 Mike on there, I believe, is how I originally got it. And I think it was late 2008 before he started his show. And I came across Birdman Dodd on there. So I've known him just about as long. And then I think that's how I found you guys. And I listened to your guys' show. And because I was also kind of a noob to the podcasting world, I was just kind of communicating with anybody that
would listen.
Who would listen, or who I could just kind of, you know, bounce ideas off of and all this, you know. And so I mean, it was kind of funny that we're all still friends today, even after like the initial conversations on Twitter and despite all the crazy crap that went on in between. But
yeah, I mean, I mean in the early days of the lunchroom, it was just so hard to, it wasn't it wasn't hard to record and edit the show. In fact, I haven't really changed a whole lot of... The hardware has gotten better.
Yes, the hardware has gotten better.
And by hardware, basically microphones have gotten better. But not a lot has changed on my end. Like I said, I still edit everything in GarageBand. My friend was wonderful enough to donate the Wiretap Studio software that I used to record the garage or the Skype calls. When I first got it, the app had the really cool ability to record from two sources independently on separate channels.
Oh, nice.
So I could say, like right now I have it set up for record the audio from my microphone, and then I have it set up to record any audio coming out of my Mac. Originally, I could set it up so that it would record my microphone, and then I could say record any audio coming out of Skype.
Oh, nice.
So I could keep all my like Twitter notifications on, all that stuff on, but none of that would show up in the recording. When OS X was updated to Lion and then again to Mountain Lion, Apple destroyed the code or the file that they were that directs audio around the system, or they redid that. And now the app can only record Mac audio, any audio coming out of the Mac or a microphone.
Oh, that sucks.
But I can plug in two microphones to my computer and say, you record on this channel and you record on that channel. Like, so if we were doing a local record, that's how I would do it. But, you know, I went from the first microphone I started with, actually in the beginning, I experimented with any microphone I had. I tried using like my PlayStation Eye microphone because it had an omnidirectional microphone in it. And it was the original setup was me in my basement and my friends sitting around a table with the microphone in the middle. So I needed an omnidirectional microphone. So I tried my Rock Band microphone. I tried the PlayStation Eye microphone. Eventually, I decided on this Snowball. That's when I came across the Blue Mics.
Okay.
I bought their Snowball, which is basically just a round microphone on a tripod, and it had like three recording settings on it. It had, you know, the carotid like the microphones that we're using right now, and it had the omnidirectional one where it recorded in 360 degrees around it. So mm-hmm. then I started putting that. And, you know, that's what I started with, and I used that for a while, and then moved on to the Yeti. And from the Yeti, I moved on to the Nessie, which I have now. But it's been fun. I really like doing the lunchroom because it was like, you know, I was getting sitting down with my friends, but eventually it just became the logistics of doing it got kind of complicated because, like, my friends were... Some of my friends were having kids. Some of my friends got really busy with work and stuff like that. And it was just like, let's not do it. So we would go months without doing a podcast. I think one time we attempted it, we had gone a year before doing a show. And then that's when I tried for volume 3 of The Lunchroom. And... then we went to see Star Trek? No. What did we get in line? We were in line for something last summer. And we offered to do XRG. I offered to do XRG for you.
Was it Avengers?
We took over in like September. Like our first podcast for you guys was like,
maybe August it was after September. The Dark Knight Rises.
Might have been. But yeah, that we started having, because I wanted the exposure that you guys brought, but I didn't want to, I don't know, I was just kind of like, I don't know. I wanted to give my guys a reason to do something, and I was like, well, if we do a show for you guys, then it's like we're right there, and then it's not, you know, it's not my site and your site, and we're trying to do something and meet somewhere in the middle. So now we're here. Off the Cuff seems to be doing a little better recently. Audience wise,
better than XRG.
Audience wise, I think it's doing better now than it was, you know, when it started, and that's great. It took 28 episodes, which is great. That's three more episodes than any other podcast I've ever done.
Yeah, because you went volume 1, 2, and 3 with
Lunch Table. Volume 1 and 2 made it to like 25 episodes each. And volume 3, I think, made it to 6 episodes, and then we started doing XRG.
Yeah, I think that was pretty much it.
My original plan was to do both, but then I was like, you know what? Screw it. We'll talk about games, but if we meander around, we meander around. But now it's just Danner and Shanzi arguing with each other and me talking about video games, which is fine. People seem to like it. But yeah, that's the long and short of it.
Yeah.
I mean, if there's anything you guys wanted to specifically know, I mean, I know that I feel like there's a, like, Rebel FM, like, one of the reasons we record the podcast this way is because Rebel FM started doing it this way, due to the same reason Steve and I are doing the show this way, with the master track and separate audio recordings. But one thing I noticed, if I try and reach out to like one of the more professional podcasts I listen to about what they use to record, nobody ever answers. Which is kind of a bummer.
Yeah, that's true.
Why not spread it around, you know? So if anybody wants to know about like what we use or anything like that, feel free to ask. More than happy to help to get people on the right direction.
Yeah, I mean, that's and that's kind of the thing that sucked for us getting started in all this, is that we didn't really have anybody to ask these questions to. Yeah. It was kind of trial and error all along the way, and to some degree it still is.
I will say, though, if you're starting, I think the most important thing is the microphone. That's what I keep hearing, is the most important thing is the microphone.
Yeah, I mean, and you can get a halfway decent one for around $50. I don't get the plug-in ones, the $9, $12 ones. They don't sound that great. I started on those originally, and I think I made it the very first and second episode of All Things Transformers, the original first two episodes, and my war stories and all that. I used one of those microphones, and it sounds terrible. And I eventually got a USB headset from Logitech that has a microphone built into it. And I used that for, I would say, a good about a year into the network. And it didn't do very bad, but it wasn't the greatest sounding either. And then eventually I got the Blue Yeti at the recommendation of just about everybody I know. And I think yourself included.
Yep, that was me.
And I think that was the final straw, and I was like, I'm spending $100 and buying a good microphone, and I haven't regretted it since. So I mean,
at least you now got when I've $100.
Well, and now when I've guested on other people's podcasts, they're like, wow, you sound uber professional and we sound like crap, thanks. Because my audio is crystal clear compared to some of theirs, which I don't slam anybody for it. I mean, that's just personal preference and how much you want to spend on a microphone, but it can make all the difference in the world.
Yeah, and I mean, I would point, again, it's me. I like we just talked about, you know, it's your money. If you have it, you can spend it. And if you like nice things, I really have liked all of the Blue microphones.
I would definitely have to agree with you. I would recommend Blue all the way.
I transferred, let's see, my Snowball is now with my co-host Joe on Off the Cuff, and the Yeti is now residing with Danner. And I have the Nessie. Shanzi, my fourth chair, he uses his Xbox 360 headset, which is not the one that comes with it. I think it's a Turtle Beach headset.
So okay,
it's fairly good. It's good.
It's like a premium headset for
Yep. So it sounds fine. I would love to get him like a Yeti or an Essie or something like that. In fact, that was my original plan for my groomsmen's gifts for my wedding, was to get all of them Nessie microphones, but it wasn't out at my wedding. The Nessie was supposed to come out in the spring, and it didn't end up coming out until like a month ago. So that wouldn't have worked out very well. But yeah, if you guys have any questions, you can go ahead and ask. I mean, I'm more than happy to share, any tips or tricks that I have. The only issue with getting advice from me is that all my stuff is done from the Mac side, which any little knowledge I have of the Windows side has always been too tedious for me to try and follow up.
I know the Windows side backward and frontward because I've been using that the entire time. I know a very little bit of the Mac side only because I took media classes in school in the winter, and I had to learn how to edit audio and video on the Mac. And to some degree, I found it to be more of a pain for me to edit audio on the Mac compared to on Windows. But that's just because I think the apps or the applications I had on the systems, they didn't have, they weren't very easy. I think there was some kind of it was a difference in certain kind of products. I ended up using Adobe because
Were you using Logic?
I don't know what it was. It wasn't Logic, but it wasn't an Adobe product either, because I purposely went towards the Adobe product because I know it frontward and backward.
Were you editing audio in Final Cut?
We were editing the video in Final Cut Pro 7.
Okay.
And then we were editing audio in something else. It was another one of those Final Cut audio or something. I don't remember what it was.
I know the professional audio tool, the standalone professional audio tool for OS X or for the Mac is Logic, and the consumer app is GarageBand. But I know you weren't editing in GarageBand. I know that.
No. Well, the program we used, it just sucked.
Yeah.
It was more of a pain for me, so I had to cycle things through Adobe Audition, which I use Soundbooth to edit anything I do on Geekcast Radio. Blanchard uses it as well. We used to use Audacity. Certain things, like the voice modulation stuff, for instance, the old intros of Geekcast Radio, where I used to go, geekcastradio.com, you know, presents, and, you know, I used to do it like that, but I would go into Audacity because I couldn't do what I wanted in Soundbooth, and I would knock it down -3 on the bass pitch.
Okay.
Which is how I would get the extremely geekcastradio.com. Like, it sounds like my voice is muffled, like.
Right.
So, I mean, that's how I got the effect in there for a lot of that stuff. But I can do some pretty neat stuff in Soundbooth too, like there's this padded room feature, or I can make it sound like old radio or certain things like that. So, I mean, there's a lot of different tweaks and plays that you can do depending on the application you're using.
Right. But I've messed with that too. Sometimes, to a limited extent, when I was making. I remember I made the. I don't know if you remember it, because I think I worked with Mike Moore on it at the time. When I was doing the lunchroom, it was like being syndicated on your network. I used your intro and then cut into it like an alien transmission.
Yeah, I think I remember that.
I don't know where I was going with that. Actually, no, I do. I was trying to riff on. Do you remember the Sony Alien, the stoned alien Walkman guy that would? He was like giant and blue and fuzzy. He was like always. Oh man, it was like a late '90s. I think they had him for like the mini disc for their mini disc commercials. It was like this alien, and he had a giant blue head, and he had on headphones, and he looked stoned half the time. But I was trying to like go for that, like, you know, just an alien, like I was trying to, you know, just play on that. So I have like that's why some of the lunchroom artwork has the alien in it, because we're just trying to have some kind of little mascot or something like that. Just kind of throwing everything together to see what would sit at the wall. I mean, I remember the original idea with it was with my site was to I worked with a lot of working at the movie theater. There were a lot of creative people that worked there, and I was trying to give everyone like a home for them to express themselves, which is why there was a limited run of a comic strip called A Theater Near You. I don't know if you remember those. I think we only did like seven to 10 panels for it.
Yeah. I remember reading through those on your website, and I thought they were quite funny.
Yeah. My friend Dave, who recently got married, he did those. He also did, another thing I took from, shows each episode of The Lunchroom had different, podcast art. Each episode had its own art. And he would do it based off of something that we talked about in the episode. So I like doing those little things. It's just, it's a matter of having the team to do it. You know what I'm saying? Like you have to have enough people. Like at the time I had, you know, he was willing to do art for the podcast, and I was willing to edit it, and someone else is willing to go and find the stories for it. So it was like this whole team of people working on one podcast, which is great. I know, I feel like, there were, I just want to say this. I don't want to cover it or anything like that, but, the feedback that we got on the latest MWire episode was amazing.
Yeah, I had to agree.
Almost 40 comments. I just want to say we hear you. And stuff is happening. So just keep looking forward. Keep participating. And writing in. The feedback we got on that was tremendous, and we hear you. So stuff is happening. You just have to be patient with us. There's only about, really, what, there's like 4 or 5 of us?
Yeah.
So, yeah, there's 4 or 5 of us to work on all the shows.
Which is why some are delayed at points.
And we all know, credit where credit's due. TFG1 Mike works his ass off for the network. So we're trying. So we're five people trying to bring you the best podcast we can. So you have that to look forward. You have MWire to look forward to. You have not gone, that has not gone unnoticed and unheard.
It has progressively gotten better. So I mean it's due for its third evolution anyway.
So so I've got an interesting question. And then we can, I mean, along with, you know, people can answer the other ones too that have been asked. And then we can do the ways to, then we can close this out if you're okay with that.
Yeah, it sounds good.
So I find myself to be susceptible to, I'm trying to figure out how to phrase this question. Is there anything that you are like weak to? Like for me, I kind of wanted to wait until we can actually talk about this, but for me, I'm very susceptible to marketing. I understand, like you know, a couple episodes back, I said that I like the expensive alcohol because it keeps me from becoming an alcoholic because I can't buy it all the time. I try to buy expensive toys so then I can't buy them all the time. But like little things like if I see a commercial for a razor blade, or if I see a commercial for some new kind of toothpaste, these are quirks, I guess. Like, do you have any like little quirks, or like, are you susceptible to something? Just little quirks that you might have that you can share. Like, if I see a commercial for like a soap or a shampoo or a razor blade or something like that, I have this urge to go and buy it. I have to try really hard. Like, if I go into like a Walmart or a Meijer or a Target, if I go anywhere near the pharmacy department where all the soaps and all that stuff is, if I walk down an aisle, I will probably buy something, whether I need it or not. Like, but I won't, but it's kind of like an OCD thing. If I walk by that section in the store, I have to buy something from that section in the store. I guess another thing I get OCD about is like my tech stuff. Maybe it's like, do you obsess over anything? Is there anything that obsessively drives you that you just can't not give into? I think that's the best way to phrase that. Like little quirk or something like that. Like me, like if there's a tech issue that I have, I mean, this the first time I noticed it was like a decade ago when I first got my Mac. I wanted to make a music video, like one of those anime music videos where you chop up your favorite anime show, and time it out to a song. And I wanted to do that. And I was like, okay, I got my Mac here. What do I need to do to be able to do this? And everything I had was in an AVI format, which at the time OS X did not like AVI formats. So I was like, I had to figure out how to convert AVI into something else. And it took me, I stayed up all night, like researching and diving into like the nitty gritty, like codecs and all this stuff. And, you know, 12 hours after I started my research, I decided, you know what I'm going to do? I will just convert everything from AVI to an MP4 on my Windows machine and then send it over to my Mac to do the final editing. It took me 12 hours to get to that conclusion of like straight research of trying to find the best way to do it. And it's kind of coming out more and more now doing TV research. I will dive down rabbit holes after rabbit hole after rabbit hole. It's kind of like, I imagine it's kind of like what Chasing the Dragon is. Where it's like I go down a dark hole and all of a sudden it's like 4 hours later and I have no idea what just happened. But I've got like 20 tabs open on my computer and I've read every single page from top to bottom. Nice. Is there anything that you guys obsess over like that? Do you have an example, Steve? Is there anything that you obsess over?
Anything that has some kind of a draw to my childhood, I have a serious like OCD with. Like I mentioned in the past about, for instance, the wanting something just because it has to do with one of my nostalgia things.
Mm-hmm.
Like, for instance, I have this burning need to own DVD sets of TV shows I grew up with.
Right.
So anytime I see them, I have this desire to spend the money. I don't even care how much. I just am like, I really want this. Even though I know I don't need it because I really won't watch it all that often. But I still have this need because I'm like, I remember this. I liked this show back in the day, even though I'm kind of scared to put it in the DVD player and say, I hate this.
Yeah.
Now, I still buy the DVD so that I can have it.
It's for the kids.
Yeah, it's for the kids. Even though some of the jokes in them, now that I watch them, I get them and I understand how bad they are, depending on the show.
Ed, Edd, and like, Eddy is the worst.
Well, like, I've watched, like, Animaniacs, Pinky and the Brain, and Freakazoid. Some jokes in there aren't very good.
Aren't very good, like, as in they're adult?
Or they're just adult, yeah.
Okay.
It's not that they aren't good. I mean, they're funny. I mean,
they're
now
inappropriate.
That they're inappropriate. So, I mean, it's kind of like that thing. I mean, even doing the Beast Unleashed podcast, I've found things that are off color in Beast Wars that are written in the Cybertronian font to throughout the entire series.
Oh, okay.
There's literally animators telling certain other people, and either cast or animators, to do something, or, you know, F off, or certain things like that. So, I mean, it's funny what's been translated through that. But no, I mean, I have other, like, OCD things where I have to have the certain things on me, tech gadgets, and they have to be in the certain same pockets, or they have to be on me at all times, in various states.
Yeah, I have that. I mean, my keys have to be in my right pocket. My cell phone goes in my left pocket.
I have to have my cell phone, my MP3 player, my headphones, like all my crap on me.
Yeah, okay. That's more than me.
My cell phone charger at this point. I've got bad OCD. I mean, and that would be part of it. Marketing doesn't really do anything for me because I tend to ignore it.
Well, I mean,
I base things off of nostalgia and the fact that I see them when I'm browsing the aisle, but I don't watch anything to where I would get influenced by it. Okay. Now, if it's like a film I've seen in the theater this year, like for instance, Star Trek Into Darkness, I really want it, even though I know the film's not very good, I still want it on DVD or Blu-ray because I own the rest of the series.
Well, in my defense, it's not like I'm always like, I see a commercial on TV and I go out and buy it. First of all, the TV I watch doesn't have commercials in it, so that helps a lot. and that also does two things for me. One, I can watch a commercial and still laugh at it while most people are going, oh, it's another freaking commercial. I find commercials funny now. Two, the last time this happened was in like fall of 2008. Like I really don't watch TV with commercials. So like it was like fall 2008, we were watching the premiere of Flash Forward on ABC.
Oh, that was such a good show.
This is really so douchey. The book was so much better. So much better.
I could believe that.
But because the book got more into the science of it. We were watching it and there was an ad on there for something. And as soon as it was over, I was like, babe, I'm sorry. We got to go to the store. She's like, you're kidding me, right? I'm like, I'm sorry. I have to go and see if they at least have it. but if I were to see like a commercial for like, I'm not susceptible to like Apple ads or like Samsung ads. Like I find them funny and I think they're cool, but they're not like, they don't make me go, oh, I have to have that. It's the little things. It's the same idea you get when you see like a McDonald's ad and you're like, man, I want a Big Mac now. It's that same idea, right? I'm not saying like I see an ad for like a new TV, like I want to go and buy that new TV. No, I will. That triggers a whole nother OCD thing, which I did mention, which is where I just go down the rabbit hole of finding out everything there is to know. Lately, the rabbit hole I've been chasing is the plasma versus LED, or the plasma versus LCD TVs, and that is a mess of a thing to... I've learned more about plasma in the last 2 weeks than I ever thought I would know about them. But yeah,
I like them.
Allie has given me permission at this time to set my sights on a 60-inch plasma. And the issue that I'm having is the research that I've done basically ends in 2012. There hasn't been any new information about them since 2010.
Okay.
And if there is new information, like the most recent articles about plasma TVs are about the lack of information regarding plasma TVs. That manufacturers aren't talking about the pitfalls of plasma TVs anymore because people were concerned about them and weren't buying, you know, sales of the plasma TVs weren't good. So manufacturers have stopped talking about the negative side of owning a plasma. So all of a sudden there's a 3-year gap where there isn't any information about them. And it makes me like that's where I fall down the rabbit hole. Like I have to find out what's going on. And I visit like website after website after website. I do understand that they have their advantages and I've seen their advantages in person, but I've heard they're supposed to be really good for gaming. But all the information that I've looked at indicates that LED LCD TVs are now better for gaming than plasmas are, and that hooking a computer to a plasma TV is the worst thing you can do to it.
I've been doing it for 2 years now.
But the thing for me though is like I just can't. I read about like the like I know that there is a difference between burn-in and image retention. Like, have you ever noticed image retention on your TV?
Not on this one.
Okay.
But they've got something where it randomly moves the pixels.
Okay. I mean, can you notice that?
Do you know that it's moving them? Yeah. I don't notice it, no.
Okay.
But I've never seen any burn-in with this television. The previous one I had, yes.
Well, again, the difference between burn-in and image retention. Burn-in is where it's unfixable, and image retention is just a static charge that the pixel holds until it's given completely new information. And yeah, it's come a long way. A lot of the stuff I do read that's current, it's like, yeah, it's come a long way. And there's certain things like the Samsung one that I'm looking at now. If you pause a game and there's nothing on the screen, nothing moves on the screen for like a minute or two or something like that, it starts this whitewash thing where a white bar goes back and forth across the screen really fast. But when I was doing all that research, I could feel myself in my head planning out the maintenance whether it's there or not. Like I've never owned a plasma, but I've read about the break-in period for plasmas and, you know, the image retention thing and keeping them running optimally. And I'm just like, I could hear in my head, I'm like, okay, well on Saturdays I could like run the screen wipe thing to get.
I've never had to run it.
Man, maybe if you move closer to me, I will just come over and look at yours.
Because I play my Xbox on mine all the time.
I could feel that OCD-ness coming on. Well, and I don't even own the TV and I could still feel it coming on. And I think I talked about the Boxy on here that I had, or at least I've talked to you in person about it, how I'd spent like 6 hours trying to find the right file, the right way to send the files to the stupid thing.
Mm-hmm.
And I could just feel that, like, I could feel myself spending more time trying to get the thing to run optimally than I would like enjoying it. And that's just me. I mean, I'm probably creating a self-fulfilling prophecy by thinking that way. But now we've talked way too long about TVs. Again, we can talk about we should really do a tech episode so we can get all this stuff out of the way.
We should. So if you have any tech specific questions, feel free to ask those as well.
Yes, please feel free. How can they ask us those questions, Steve?
They can call the voicemail line 502-526-5821. Please remember to leave your name and the show you're leaving it for, because we do have many shows. You can email us at feedback@geekcastradio.com. You can visit the forums and episode post at geekcastradio.com. Visit the Facebook fan page by searching Geekcast Radio Network. You can also contact us on Twitter at Geekcast Radio Network, #AlteredGeek. You can contact myself at SCP21, and yours is?
At BoothNinja81.
So I think that's pretty much it for this time. And until next time, which we'll be back from Grand Con, and hopefully there'll be another episode of to some degree that we'll have for a crossover.
Yep.
You guys
might get two episodes next week.
Yeah, you might.
If you're really good. and give us lots of comments, we might give you 2 episodes next week.
Yes, lots of comments. Lots and lots. So, until next time, get unplugged from the web and get altered with the Altered Geeks.